Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Robert Colson, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Welcome, Rob. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Steve. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. Today we're going to talk about Moldova and the recent election there, and also once again about the coronavirus pandemic and how that's affecting Russia. Let's start with Moldova, where former Prime Minister Maia Sandu beat the incumbent Igor Dodon by a substantial margin in the presidential runoff on November 15th. Dodon has had warm relations with Moscow and has essentially been a fan of Russian President Vladimir Putin. And Sandu favors closer ties with the European Union. Now, the day after the election, Sandu vowed to ensure a real balance in foreign policy and to establish, quote, a pragmatic dialogue with all countries, including Ukraine, Romania, European nations, Russia, and the United States, unquote. So she put them in that order, whether that's meaningful or not. Rob, what do you think? Is her victory and Dodon's defeat a setback for Moscow and for its efforts to, I would say, maintain at least or increase its clout in other former Soviet republics?
Well, see, it would seem that way at first, obviously. Dodon is a staunchly pro-Russian politician who disavowed Moldova's ties with Romania, Ukraine, and the European Union, and was really reliant on Moscow almost to the point of being a client. And he lost soundly to a technocrat, a English-speaking Western reformer. So it would seem on the surface, yes, it's a defeat for Moscow. But as usual in Moldova, things are more complicated than that. The fact is that Moscow really didn't try very hard to support Dodon, which is a signal in itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, they sent some consultants to help, but they didn't send their A-team by any means. Mm-hmm. And the campaign was widely criticized as just being laughably incompetent. He spoke only to his core constituency, never made any effort to expand it in any way. Dodon alienated the Moldovan diaspora living in Europe, which came out overwhelmingly for Sandu and was really the tipping force that gave her such a strong win. Mm-hmm. So it was, and any competent consultant would have giving him better advice. Also, Dodon was really hoping that Putin would come visit or that the Russian patriarch would come and visit. Moscow didn't give any of that kind of support. They didn't get the loans that they wanted, nothing. So it really doesn't, it can't be said that Moscow had a lot of stakes going in this election and lost it. Mm-hmm. So now what's going on is it will depend on what happens in parliamentary elections. They're scheduled for 2023, but they'll most likely be early elections because the parliament is just a total mess now. The prime minister is a former aide of Dodon's and a member of the Socialist Party, or at least tied to the Socialist Party, I'm not sure, member. Mm-hmm. So it has no support. Sandu has a pretty solid mandate, popular support. So there will almost certainly be early elections. Interestingly, since the election came, Sandu has already said she wants to go to Moldova. She wants to go to Kiev, or to Romania, I mean, and to Kiev. Mm-hmm. And Dodon has said, on the contrary, that he's going to Moscow. Right. So he's got to go and talk to Kozak and get his marching orders from Moscow and make sure that he's still Moscow's man in Moldova, even though he's now going to go back to the parliament and head the Socialist Party. Mm-hmm. Socialist Party has the largest faction, about a third of the deputies in the Moldovan parliament, but the Moldovan parliament itself is just a mess. So many of the deputies have left their factions and are technically independent now, and they're basically voting with whoever pays them. So it's completely unpredictable and has no support in the public. Russia, just to see Russia's interest there, I mean, Russia doesn't mind, I don't think, the idea of Moldova being between the EU and Russia, mm-hmm. and even likes it when the EU pays for things in Moldova that Russia would otherwise have to pay for. So to that extent, I don't think they're too worried. They have plenty of mechanisms to put the brakes on any real bid to go too strongly to the West, mm-hmm. Both in Transnistria and Gagauzia and in the parliament itself.
Right.
In a sense, what could happen is a repeat of what happened when Sandu was prime minister. In 2019, I believe it was, she became prime minister in a coalition with the Dadaan Socialist Party. They voted for her and they let her in. As soon as her anti-corruption agenda got too aggressive, let's say,
right,
the socialists withdrew their support, had a no-confidence vote, kicked her out, and replaced her. So they could do that again. They could, the socialists in the parliament could support whoever Sandu nominates to be prime minister if the current government falls. Then at some key moment, halfway or more through her presidency, they could create a political crisis in the government, undermine her reforms, that sort of thing. It should be remembered, Russia and Russian, not just the Kremlin, but Kremlin-connected sort of business interests, they really benefit from having Transnistria as a unsolved problem, mm-hmm. Where illegal money from Russia can go to Transnistria and through Moldova to, say, crooked banks in the Baltics and into the West that way. And any attempt to cut off that very lucrative avenue of activity would definitely result in a severe reaction from Moscow.
Okay, well, I mean, that's all extremely fascinating. You mentioned several times the kind of the reform efforts that you said, Sandu's reform efforts kind of, went too far for her opponents at one point, and she was reined in. And, you know, I guess a lot of observers are saying, one of the things that will really have a big effect on Moldova in the future is whether she can enact reforms and push them through and fight corruption. I think that's something that she mentioned kind of hand in hand with her vow of a balanced foreign policy. So that may be, and some people have said, sort of like in Ukraine, where tackling corruption and enacting reforms is something that can help diminish Russia's potential influence. I guess it's similar for Moldova.
Definitely, but as I said, it's combating corruption is a slow, long, technical process, and Moscow, through its various levers in Moldova, has many ways to make sure that such efforts are undermined or weakened or misdirected. In 2019, when she was prime minister and she was serious about corruption, the goal was, and Moscow's goal was, to get rid of Vlad Plahotniuc, the odious Moldovan oligarch.
Right.
But they didn't want to end corruption. They just wanted to get rid of him. And when they succeeded in doing that, that's when Dadaan got rid of Sandu as prime minister and put in his own people. He wanted, if not economically, to politically take Plahotniuc's place.
Right. So there's certainly levers that Russia has for the longer term and the medium term, I guess, maintain influence. Okay. Now over to Russia itself, I guess. The coronavirus pandemic has continued to hit hard since a new surge of cases began after the lull that followed the first wave in the spring. Today, actually, Russia recorded a record number of daily cases, over 25,000 for the first time. And on Saturday, I believe there's a record number of deaths, 467. I think that was down below 400 today. Rob, you've been working on stories about this in part based on material from RFURL's Russian service. One article that for me stood out as heartrending really was one last week about the situation in Vologda, a northern city where the healthcare system seems to really be struggling to deal with COVID. Rob, what are the stories you've worked on tell you about how things stand at this point?
It is really interesting. This new wave of COVID isn't really hitting Russia harder than it is hitting other countries, but it is exposing a lot of the weaknesses in Russia's system. It's much more geographically widespread than the first wave was, much like what's going on in the United States, for example. And regional cities have been really badly hit. And that has exposed weaknesses in the Russian political system. One is that it's a very top-down system, and the lower you get on the sort of political totem pole down to the mayor's office and the local city level, the more the blame sort of falls on you and the more incentive you have to sort of hide the situation. And that we've definitely seen that in our regional reporting, both in Vologda and other northern cities and in Siberia. Irkutsk had a very similar situation. The officials definitely downplay the extent of the crisis. And when they admit that there's a problem, they have no other choice but to look upward to Moscow or first to the governor's office and then to Moscow for some sort of assistance. And that's slow and ineffective, and especially if all 89 regions are calling for aid at the same time. The other thing is Russia has been going through, it's either in the middle of or toward the end of its what they call their optimization of the healthcare system, which has been a long-standing national project of Russia's going back decades. And this, they call it optimization, but really it's been sort of consolidation, and it's resulted in the closing of a lot of local rural clinics, the elimination of local doctors and ambulance services and everything. So the smaller your town is, the more distant your medical service is.
Right.
And so this Russia's been bragging for years now that it's been improving its healthcare system, but I think that the pandemic is really showing that it's definitely not improved. People are waiting. You know, just imagine, and the Volga story is a good example. I mean, imagine you're in such a bad situation health-wise that you call an ambulance to come and help you, and then you wait 12 hours for an ambulance to come, and the first thing they do is take you to some clinic to get a CT scan, because Russia doesn't have enough of these scanners. And you wait another 4, 5, 6 hours in line in an ambulance to get a CT scan. So, I mean, it really is heartbreaking how that's happened. And another thing I would mention is that Russia has had, like a lot of other countries around the world, had a lot of civic initiatives to help. One that's very popular now is people volunteering to serve as drivers to help doctors
right.
get to and from work or to make house calls and that sort of thing. But the local authorities can't really give the impression that they need this kind of help or that people can do things for themselves. That doesn't resonate very well in the Putinist political system. You may recall that in Belarus, one of the sort of precursors of the opposition movement that's so strong now was exactly the civic response to the pandemic and people
right.
suddenly realizing that they could do things and help themselves. And certainly it's not anything like that in Russia yet, but the authorities wouldn't want anything like that to emerge.
Right, absolutely. And I mean, the level of denial, of course, by the Russian authorities is not close to that of Lukashenko. But I see what you're saying. I mean, the exact same situation where you have, you know, people who are trying to help and the authorities who it's really not, you know, good for them to acknowledge that they need that help. And I think that kind of attitude probably goes back to the Soviet era to some degree. And it's just another thing I'll just mention is you point out the optimization, so-called. You know, I seem to recall that was happening during Medvedev's presidency as well, which, you know, was getting to be several years ago now. So, you know, again, obviously they couldn't foresee this crisis, but it is exposing, as you say, exposing some of the weaknesses. All right. Thanks a lot, Rob. We're running out of time. We're going to have to wrap it up for today. Thanks very much for joining me.
All right. Thanks for having me again. Take care.
Okay. I'll be back next Monday with another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. Thanks for listening.